Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is my friend, retired Dr. Peter Cookson. And I saw something on the news a couple of nights ago that I spoke to him about. Who is responsible for triage? If somebody refuses to get the vaccination, gets sick, winds up in the hospital, and that bed could maybe be used for somebody who might be also critically ill. Is it responsible for the person who does not get the vaccine to take up a hospital bed? So, Peter, what are your thoughts?
This is a very complicated question or problem. That it's my opinion that there are individuals who would like to simplify the answer or simplify the question as you have framed it. Those individuals who arrive at the hospital who have not yet been vaccinated did not get their vaccines for a variety of reasons, not because mm-hmm. they are evil, wicked, stupid, or otherwise. These people who are have not been vaccinated are uninformed or misinformed by those persons who are responsible for informing the public as to the requirements or needs for their health and well-being. There are lots of historical examples to underscore what I just said. What comes to mind, among the things that come to mind, is my own personal experience during the time I spent at the University of Pennsylvania and at the Pennsylvania Hospital, which hospital was originally constructed in the 18th century and later the 19th century was added on. And at that time, during the construction of the hospital, accommodations were built that would provide space and necessary equipment to look after a sudden increase or a sudden overload of patients as a result of illness, accident, explosion, flood, what have you. This was a concept that was part of the hospitalization construction or design back in the 19th century. Today, it's absolutely out of the question because it is determined to be inefficient to have rooms or space that is set aside for just in case. Among the other things I would like to just put out there, and that is that our military has been aware of the fact that they must set up a system to look after a sudden increase in the number of soldiers or casualties that should occur as a result of battlefield injuries. I was part of a, quote, MASH unit, unquote, pardon me, during the Vietnam era, which was designed and staffed for hospital overflow. And it was equipped to handle any disaster that may occur that would suddenly require a mobile hospital to be moved from McGuire Air Force Base to wherever it was needed. And I was part of that. This is our military had recognized the need to be able to respond to a sudden demand for medical care. This was an outcropping of the disastrous handling of soldiers during the First World War when the influenza epidemic broke out and was especially devastating in the military population. So anyhow, they learned that lesson, and in the 1960s and 70s, when it was my turn to join up, I did so and was immediately assigned to participate in a MASH type unit. Pardon me, it wasn't called MASH unit in the Air Force, But that's basically what it was, and people are familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that that confronts a hospital medical staff person when he is presented with more than one individual almost simultaneously or simultaneously that are both acutely ill and both require acute medical care, and to ask that physician to determine whether or not he will expend or use the limited resources that he has, and that's a very that's a huge topic to get into. That is, why is he confronted with limited resources? And to make a determination as to which of the individual of the say 2, 3, 4 individuals that present to his hospital almost simultaneously, he should look after and make a decision based upon a piece of historical information that does not necessarily come along with the individual, which says, I was vaccinated, I refused to get vaccinated, I am very, very sick, so you must treat me like you would treat me as if you didn't know that information, or also you must treat me in the same way that you would treat anybody else. And that's the problem that is being presented to the hospital specialist who doesn't know, and perhaps he does not want to know, whether or not an individual is or has not yet been vaccinated. If he has not been vaccinated and has a blood oxygen level that is in a desperately low level, and next to him is another individual who presents with a similar set of clinical circumstances or presentations, blood pressure, oxygen level, blood sugar level, et cetera, whatever the other situation, whatever the complexities that may accompany the person presenting to him in the as that person enters the emergency room doors by way of an ambulance. This guy, here's three people who arrive at the same time from a ambulance, and all three of them have a blood oxygen level in a desperately low situation. All of them are frothing at the mouth. All of them have a low blood pressure. All of them have a rapid heart rate. The physician who is confronted with these three individuals simultaneously is not going to say, which one of you got vaccinated, which one of you didn't get vaccinated. That's absurd. That's a political question. And he would have to, he would be thinking about that, but would not ever ask that question. The fact that he doesn't have room for all three of those people simultaneously is because a political decision, a corporate decision, was made long ago and way above his pay grade, or in a different, altogether different pay grade, or in a different situation. So the physician who is required to, quote, triage, unquote, or make that decision, has been placed in that position by a political policy maker or by a corporate hospital policy person who has decided that we are not going to provide an intensive care unit that has overflow capacity because it's inefficient and we would lose money on all of those empty dust collecting beds or having medical staff on hand that would be available for an increase or for an overflow. That's inefficient. And some CEO or some corporatist would probably have to forego some of his millions of dollars that he collects on an annual basis for running a hospital that is, quote, efficient, unquote. So the question has to be a little bit different. Some time ago, in the early year months of 2020, long before a vaccine became available, good physicians were confronted on a daily basis with multiple patients who were critically ill. And what did you do with them? Well, in our case, in the state of New York, two things come to mind right away that were done. First of all, Our governor opened the Jacob Javits Convention Center in Manhattan and staffed it with beds and got people in there who were able to take some of this overload and look after these patients. Basically, he's doing the same thing there with the limited resources that he had that the Chinese were able to do when in Wuhan when there was a sudden explosion or great number of cases of coronavirus. They built hospitals. They built two 1,000-bed hospitals within the period of a month's time. The first hospital took 2 weeks to build and staff and equip. 2 weeks to equip a 1,000-bed hospital. And the next day, the day when that hospital opened up, right next to it, right around the corner, was another hospital, 1,000 beds, under construction immediately. And it took another 2 weeks for them, or somewhat less, because they got it together quicker. And they were building hospitals to take care of their patients. That was their focus. Focus was not money, not efficiency. The focus was, how are we going to take care of all of these sick people? Among the things that also happened in the state of New York, and I don't know whether Cuomo had anything to do with this or not, and that is the U.S. Navy brought in a hospital ship, and they docked it on the Hudson River at one of the piers down there. It was docked with lots of fanfare, and patients were transferred to that hospital ship. And we saw pictures, local news showed pictures of hospital, what do you call it, of ambulances showing up at pier, whatever it was, and transferring the ill, the sick people to the hospital ship. For some reason or other, and it wasn't ever clear to me exactly why that hospital ship suddenly left the New York Harbor. I don't know. The only thing I heard was that many of the sailors on board that vessel got sick, and that's certainly possible. That would say that those people who were on board that ship had no idea what the heck they were dealing with. That's possible, but not likely. So whatever happened there, what was going on? Why would they send that ship away that was able to accept patients from profiting hospitals? Is there a profit motive in there? I don't know the answer. Maybe it's not fair for me to say that they were sent on their way because the hospitals in New York City were losing money. The other question that comes to mind, and that is, if a physician is required to do some triage, make a triage decision, do you get a red tag? Do you get a green bracelet? Do you get a yellow bracelet when you walk in the front door or when you are carried in the front door seeking medical care? That's a quote, triage system, unquote. And to place that responsibility on the shoulders of a physician, unfortunately, it does occur, but is unfair, and the question is unfair. The whole system is unfair and is not designed in any way to look after patients suffering from, in this case, a pandemic. What happens? Yes, dear.
Okay, my question to you is, both of us live in New York.
Yes.
We both live upstate.
Yes.
So we are subjected to some mandatory rules, one of them being seatbelts, okay?
Yes.
Seatbelts were enacted because they said it saves lives.
Yes.
If that's mandatory, why isn't the vaccine mandatory? Well, it will save lives, not only the lives of the people they come in contact with, but maybe somebody who will be able to have a hospital bed who might not because it's taken up by a COVID patient.
Yes. Okay. Pardon me. Those are very good questions. And another example I would just add to the seatbelt is a motorcycle helmets.
Right.
Those individuals who refuse to put a seatbelt on or who refuse to wear a motorcycle helmet are putting not only themselves at risk, but also the community at risk for supporting them on a heart-lung machine after they smash into a tree or a brick wall or whatever have you. And so it is on the basis of this question, which has been answered in the case of sweet seatbelts and motorcycle helmets unequivocally, and society has managed to survive very nicely with the imposition upon their freedom to wear a helmet if you're going to get on a motorcycle, somehow or other they survive. So I suspect that if some politician had to...
My question to you is whether it's a helmet or a seatbelt, that is not contagious.
Correct.
But the coronavirus is.
That's right. Right. That's a very good qualifying factor to bring into. It's a political decision, period. That's my impression. And if there's a politician on this planet, in this country, who will stand up and say, if you don't get vaccinated, you don't show up at the hospital. The only people who will show up at the hospital and be rendered care are those who come with their vaccination card in hand or stuffed in their pocket somewhere or other. If you don't show up with that card at the hospital, you will not be admitted, period. That is a political decision, and I haven't heard anybody willing to stand up and vote for that or demand that. And the answer, you know, why is another question altogether that, you know, you can get both sides of that question. But if that political decision were to be made by the governor of the state of, you name it, that would solve a lot of this problem.
Couldn't the president of the United States mandate that?
Yes.
Then it would be
yes.
a federal mandate.
Exactly. No problem. Sure. Would he need the congressional approval? Well, he would get lots of howling, screaming, and yelling from a number of politicos in Congress. However, it's my opinion that an emergency could be declared, and this is indeed what is going on, and as part of the regulations for that emergency, as we had in this country, I mean, in the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo demanded and received from the legislature or the assembly, emergency powers. And among those, he insisted that preparations be made and that people line up and get their vaccines. I don't remember him saying you must have a vaccine in order to get admitted to a hospital. I never saw that. But if you were to make that decision and say you will not be admitted to the hospital unless you have that vaccination card in hand, can be done. And again, it's a political decision. And why is it not done? It's a reason for another one of these discussions. And that would place that burden of that decision squarely on the shoulders of the politicians where it belongs, not on the shoulders of the internal medicine or the hospital specialist who is dedicating their lives and to look after these critically ill patients, vaccinated or not.
Well, my assemblyman is a pharmacist.
Yes.
And I called him this morning, and he hasn't gotten back to me yet. I'd like to do a show with him to talk about why isn't vaccines mandatory.
Yes, of course. And I would like to know his opinion as well.
Okay.
And see where it is. Yesterday, I had to go into Cobleskill, and I saw in front of the Walmart and in front of Price Chopper grocery stores big signs that said, free vaccines, come in and get your free vaccine. And one of them said, we also... giving you flu vaccines too. And on our way to the grocery store, there we went past the CVS pharmacy and There was one other, I forget what the name of that one is. But anyhow, they also had signs out front saying, come on in and get your COVID-19 vaccine. And the Hannaford in Esperance had a similar sign out there at 9:30 at night saying, we'll give you your shot, your COVID-19 vaccine at 9:30 at night. Just come right in and step right up and we'll give you the vaccine. So my bet is that a pharmacist who works in a store that is providing free vaccines for COVID and influenza would be strongly in favor of vaccines. In the 1918-1919, no vaccine, no influenza vaccine was available, period. And so
right.
People were dying. People, you know, the mechanism of transmission was not as well appreciated back in 18 and 19 as well as it is today, although good people did suspect that it was a aerosol transfer. And so we see pictures of the persons in the wards at Pennsylvania Hospital wearing masks. We see pictures of the police bringing individuals in who were critically ill also wearing masks. So they had some idea back then, but they had no vaccine. So I don't know whether there was a political decision made or a requirement posted for average citizens to wear a mask if they were going to be out on the street. The classic, unfortunately, is the parade that was held to raise money for the war effort in Europe during the First World War, and people lining the streets to watch the soldiers walk by, none of whom had masks on, or very few had masks on. So I don't know what the hell that is, you know, why they didn't do that. The mayor of the city of Philadelphia at the time was notorious for a variety of reasons. So how does a physician deal with this when confronted with three individuals who present at the same time, all of whom have symptoms that are compatible with a coronavirus infection? A good physician will look very carefully and very quickly and assess the situation to determine whether or not he can identify what is called comorbidities. That is the patient also suffering from diabetes, obesity, or any other immune system disorder that may impair his or her ability to respond to the therapeutic modalities that are available today to the patient and in the armamentarium of the physician who is responding to this patient. So, you know, if somebody comes in and weighs 600 pounds and is 5'2", and somebody comes in who's, 5'2" and weighs 125 pounds, he may want to look after the 125-pounder first. And I'll get around to the other one as soon as I can. You know, that's a mechanism of triage. And although I never saw combat in Vietnam, I did have the opportunity to speak with my partners and other physicians who were combat physicians in Vietnam, and they did triage, you know, on a routine basis. And they, had stickers, or the corpsmen actually were really, they got better at it than the physicians, or they were quicker
at
it.
What you're saying is you have to make a decision instantaneously on who you would treat.
Yes.
If it was mandated that people get vaccine,
yes,
then you would not have that moral dilemma, correct?
That's correct. Yes, the moral dilemma would fall upon the shoulders of the person who designed or engineered, not the architect, but the person who was responsible for building a hospital that was inadequately designed to respond to these kinds of occasional needs. That would be somebody else's responsibility. But, yes, I would have to, and I did, make judgments based on, you know, an automobile accident, for instance, in which three or four individuals were involved and three or four individuals were critically wounded or injured. Yes, I would make a decision, and I would have to make a decision right away because moments are critical to treat some of the individuals who have internal injuries or head injuries. You need to make a decision right away. You need to look at them right quick and hope to God that you're right every time. And you're not always right every time, but you can't see inside as the patient is coming through the front door.
When people are not being vaccinated, you know, they're saying, you know, this thing can mutate. The more mutations there are, this sicker people will be. And I'm going to go back to, you know, why risk mutations when all you've got to do is mandate the vaccine, right?
I agree. Yes, that will go a long way towards protecting the citizenry of this country. So far, I have not seen anybody talk about, this one person talked about developing a vaccine that is specifically designed to deal with the Delta and Lambda strains, or variants, rather. But so far, the other variants, I mean, the vaccines seem to be useful, better than nothing, in treating these variants that have evolved. And there will be more that evolve as long as we have patients who are getting sick, and we don't know what the heck is happening with those persons who have been vaccinated who do contract the Delta and Lambda strain, in which the viruses of those strain are variants, grow. And will they then develop further mutations that will enable them to attack and successfully kill the individuals who are vaccinated? I don't know the answer to that. Only time will tell. And so that's a difficult question. And I haven't seen anything in the more recent medical literature.
Okay, our time is just about up, Peter, but I do have one last question.
Yes.
How far down the road do you see light at the end of the tunnel? 1 year, 2 years, 6 months? What do you think?
Oh, I pardon me. I see this dealing with critical situations in a couple of years or so. I'm talking years, not days, weeks, or months. Years. My wife just returned from the West Coast. They're filling up the hospitals in Oregon with unvaccinated individuals. You know, even if they go home, who knows what the heck, you know, what status they will have. So already in Oregon, where she spent the last 2.5 weeks, the hospitals are bulging at the seams with coronavirus patients who are critically ill.
So our time is up for today, Peter, and I'm sure that you and I will be talking again, as this, like you said, is not going away tomorrow.
No.
So you've been listening to Dr. Peter Cookson. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and this is All Exits Closed. Thanks, Peter. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you're welcome. Call me again.
Okay.